Matt Walsh, it was so great to see you in action, improvising with your Bluebird improv cohorts last weekend. But even better than seeing you improvise was chatting you up in the bar afterwards, you and me and Dee. And you said this amazingly powerful, simple thing. You said, improv is magic. And I'd never heard it expressed so clearly and perfectly and succinctly about that. So even though you said it so perfectly and succinctly, can we now talk for 15 more minutes about what that means to you?
Yeah, my first thought is I sound really intelligent when I say things simply. And now I will prove out that I'm not that intelligent.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Austin Titchener, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 19th year, number 967, Improv is Magic. Dee Ryan and I got to see our old friend Matt Walsh improvise at the I.O. in Chicago a few weeks ago with Bluebird Improv, and I was thrilled that we got to continue our bar conversation a few days later over Zoom. In fact, this episode has more of a meandering feel of a bar conversation. We talk about improv, acting, Matt's roles on Veep, and as the racist Dr. Samuel Mudd in the Apple TV miniseries Manhunt. So try to imagine the sounds of animated voices, clinking glasses, and barroom music in the background. Maybe it was the liquid courage of the IPA in the IO bar, but clarity, but you're not wrong. There is something magical about how the true use of improv can create a narrative that has meaning and comedy and truth in it, even though it is group created by the group. Does it feel like creation to you, or does it feel like discovery? Is discovery part of the magic?
100% it's discovery. I think, you know, compared to like theater, like a set play, the context for which you as an audience member observe like a rehearsed play and can be transported by it and blown away and relate to the characters in a really intimate way and cry and laugh. And at the end of it, you're like, that, I have to see that again. But you're not like, how did they do that?
Right.
Because you understand the process and you understand perhaps the artifice. And so sometimes uneducated audiences see a long form, and so they're blown away. And that's what makes it magic, because they're like, how are they really just making all that up? Like every piece of dialogue was not planned. And so there's those audiences that witness it. And then there are audiences who know that long form, you know, has structure and that they have rules of agreement and they have tendencies to choose certain things that are interesting and they try to sustain them and keep them alive. So they may be like an insider crowd, but the discovery of it, I think, is what makes it like almost like, how did they get out of this? You know, if Houdini tied himself and locked himself in a box and put himself underwater. Sometimes in improv, there's all these things coming together and storylines, and then someone or some people will tie it all together in a magical way. And that's the sort of magic that can also happen.
The slight magic that we experience when we're doing our Reduced Shakespeare Company shows is the audiences who and our shows are scripted and rehearsed, and but we're trying to pull them off in a way that makes it seem like every play, right? Like it's happening for the very first time. And so audiences will say to us, "Oh my God, did you make up? Was that improvised?
Oh,
that
wow.
Moment?"
Wow.
You know? So we'll get that The magic I always experience, you know, with you guys and with the best of improvisers, it doesn't matter what it was. The fact that it just happened, we all discovered it at the same time. And, you know, then there are companies or groups that will develop their scripts using improvisation. and a line, a comic line that came up in the moment is hysterical, but then you script it and you repeat it several times and you go, really? That was great in the moment. Was that good enough to really write down? That's a challenge for us too.
Well, that's absolutely true. I think what you're saying is like the audience is with you and they know that it's been made up in the moment. And so they're experiencing it, I guess, kind of like there's no fourth wall in, right, in improv. They're really in it with you. They get nervous for you. Sometimes their information is pulled into the show. We interview them. So they are in fact part of the performance. And so that is probably the biggest factor. You're right, that they're kind of on the ride with you and experiencing it in the room as if they're part of it. And I guess that's what maybe the word magic applies to.
Well, and there's something too about the best improvisers, and you can tell this, I see this most distinctly in when I see younger improvisers versus older, wizened improvisers, you know, is patience.
Yeah.
You know, letting, how do you build that patience where you trust that the scene or the character or the comedy or the conflict will come to you?
I think experience just proves that out. I think early improvisers, myself included, were very frenetic and anxious about being funny and the general amount of entertainment that those points of view generate is not good. Like, you don't do well when you're in that mode. And what you discover is your ability to ease into scenes on stage allows you to listen, allows you to make better choices, allows you to commit to what's really valuable, like mm-hmm. the things that are like worth paying attention to, the group mind sort of understands together. And that elevates the work tremendously. And I think just doing shows, you're stacking the deck with really like Bluebird. Everybody on that stage is very, very talented at improv. So you stack the deck with really talented people. And so you can coast a little bit with the burden of like, I have to be funny. You know that like, oh, I can set Tim up to be funny or Brad up to be funny, or I can just be on the back wall and watch them do a scene for a moment. Like, you're sort of stacking the deck by casting people who can help you along the way and realizing that you don't have to be that funny all the time.
Do you find yourself, because I don't improvise enough, so I'm always in my head, but do you find yourself, how do you know, oh, if I say this, it's one thing, but if I say this other thing, this is, if I play the opposite of what the audience or the other character expects, it will be funnier and more interesting. Is that just an instinct to know it's be more interesting if I make this choice versus that choice?
I think of, you're sort of, the gamesmanship of improv is like, you might have a premise, but you want to say it like a real human being and not like a math formula. So you right. want to say, you want to behave as an actor would, and improvisers are all pretty good actors. You have to be. So you want to behave as if you're in that reality. So you're sort of disguising your intention sometimes just by speaking it informally and trying to hope they you've communicated where you think this could go. But the reality is ultimately too, you can't be disappointed by the assist that you gave someone if they don't take the shot you want. You have to roll, because improv is exactly the wonderful reaction that you never would have expected. And so that's what, if you own that too, it's like, I think this could go here, and then somebody goes, no, I want it to go here, and then you're like, well, that's amazing, you know, you never saw that coming. And so you try to embrace that as well. That's
even cool. I love that analogy. You can't be disappointed in that they didn't take the shot you thought they were going to take. Yeah.
Because you are recognizing something interesting that they may have put out there in the ether at the beginning of the scene, and they might have mentioned it. So you're like, oh, I'm going to focus on that. And I think that dynamic could be really funny. And so you're identifying what you find interesting through informal dialogue. And then they hear it and they go, well, it is interesting, but it's not in the way you think it's interesting. It's in the way that this is interesting. You know what I mean? And so it's that give and take, and you have to be nimble and not rigid in where your expectations are, I guess.
Hi, I'm Mark Larson, the author of Ensemble, an Oral History of Chicago Theater, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This fall of 2025, we'll be touring All the Great Books Abridged at various venues we'll announce soon, and The Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged in Washington State at the Edmonds Center for the Arts on December 3rd and the Capitol Theater in Yakima on December 12th. Sign up for our newsletter or check out the touring page at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with actor and improviser Matt Walsh. I love that you said, improvisers are the best improvisers are good actors, because I think the flip is true, too. The best actors are good improvisers, you know.
I explain that. I don't know that I think of, not that I'm saying good actors can't improvise, but more so I feel like good actors are the ones who can stay inside the dialogue and really bring it to life.
Well, but the challenge of that is to stay inside the dialogue as it's written and rehearsed and still make it feel improvisational. Make it feel spontaneous. It's a different set of muscles, but also be willing to roll with what's happening to you on this night, what the audience is giving you, what the other actors are giving you, and still doing the text. I mean, it's not a degree of difficulty kind of thing, but I do think there is there's some equilibrium. I think the best actors and the best improvisers can swing both ways, as they say.
I would love an example of that. I'm not disagreeing with you, but I find it interesting because I have great respect for, what I call real actors.
Yeah.
Give me an example of how you remember improvising inside something, or you were with someone on stage and they were improvising inside of something.
I think it's typically an emotional grounding. It's like it's being in an emotional place, bringing different emotional colors to the text.
Okay.
Challenging it, dialing something way back. Stalking across the stage away from the your co-scene partner, or coming right up and being in your partner's face, all using the same dialogue, but mixing it up, challenging it based on either what you're feeling that day or what the other actor's bringing or whatever.
If somebody's improvising their blocking on a given night, does that make you anxious, or are you so on board? You're like, all right, let's do this.
I'm so on board.
Yeah.
Unless it's messing up a light cue or, the stage manager, there's something like that. I love it. That's the most fun. I mean, Dee and I always talk about the fact that she and I are always, we want to arrive at the same spot, but we're coming from different places. You know, I want to make it look like my scripted material is completely improvised on the night. And she's trying to improvise a thing that at the end of it, everybody goes, oh my God, that seems scripted and rehearsed, We're both trying to arrive. We're all trying to arrive at this narrative, comedic, dramatic storytelling.
Yeah, that's interesting.
How do you balance? I mean, how did you balance it in Veep, for instance? That was scripted, but there was scenarios and formats and freedom to improvise new lines, improvise new moments. That must have been a fun balancing act for you as an actor and an improviser.
Yeah, Veep was heavy improv and rehearsal, and then successive rewrites would hone the scripts to where they were incredibly perfect. And then you want to do justice to those wonderful jokes that those writers, you don't always get great scripts as an actor, so you're really trying to execute those jokes as best as possible. But when we get on set, I always felt like there was openness to discovery. Like, you know, we're in a real fire station and somebody discovers that stupid pole. And Julia's like, we have to go down this pole. I don't know how we're going to do it. But so sometimes the space inspires improv. And then oftentimes, you know, you're getting a reaction from Tony, which is like really funny. So we might want to like open that up and give Tony a moment there. Sure. Like there's those sort of on the day improvisations. And then I always feel like the default use of improv is like the tail of the scene, the camera's still running and people just try a few extra lines to, you know, for a button on the scene. And then, right. And occasionally you get a free run. It's like, well, production is hectic, so we didn't have a lot of free runs generally, but
right.
Sometimes we would get a free run and you could just sort of paraphrase and try anything.
That's amazing. Do you have a favorite example of that from your time there?
The one thing, we were in England and Tony and I were mucking about in a castle with a tea set, and it was like an antique tea set. And we were doing physical comedy and we broke the tea set. We knocked it down in real life and we were both laughing. And Julia is like off camera going, turn around. We're going to use this. So you can see us sort of turning away from camera to hide our laughter, but it made the moment usable in a way that like we now improvise the scene about like, oh, we have to hide this broken china and this is really valuable. But we were also sort of teary-eyed from stifling our laughter. And that some of that ended up in the cut.
These are gifts. Maybe this is the other thing we're talking about improv being magic. You know, these are gifts that you can seize on rather than thinking, oh my God, it's a mistake. You know, seize the magic, seize the gift, and run with it.
Yeah, it's like the pre-conscious or conscious thing that everyone's thinking about. And when you label it, like, you know, if somebody's talking at the bar on their cell phone and it's obviously everyone is distracted by it, if somebody on the stage inserts a comment about that, there's great relief in the audience because it's like, thank God somebody's talking about that jerk at the bar.
Yeah.
And so there's that too. I don't know if that's magic, but there's that sort of fulfillment of like, I wish somebody would comment on this. That's what everyone in the room is thinking.
Yeah. Telling the truth.
Yeah. The truth, spontaneous truth, not like we're going to do a play about politics and the truth in politics is they're all liars. You know, that's right. A truth, but a momentary specific truth. You're right.
And that makes it unique and special to that moment and to that audience. And that's part of the magic, because every night it'll be different. There'll be a different truth on a different night. And in fact, talk about gifts. Seeing you playing the villainous Dr. Mudd in the miniseries Manhunt, the search for John Wilkes Booth or whatever, was such a gift to me as a viewer, as a fan of Matt Walsh. I imagine it was a gift to you too, a little, wait, Matt Walsh is now playing villains in films. How did any of the improv, did you find any of your improv background and or comedy background come to the fore when you're playing that guy?
I don't know that comedy was ever pursued doing that role, but I think I told you Monica, the woman who wrote it, Beletsky, really nice, talented woman. She liked me from improv and she wanted an unlikely, or rather a likable demon, I think is sort of what she was looking for. Mm-hmm. And we sort of talked the other night how like sometimes the mundaneness of evil is shocking. Like that movie Zone of Interest, for example, it's like, it's crazy. Evil isn't like boisterous and menacing. Oftentimes it's very mundane and in a way and very acceptable. And so I think a man living, one, what a treat. Like you doing Shakespeare, there's so much source material that's been digitized. Like you can really go deep on Dr. Mudd. You can read his letters. You can read the court cases. You can hear his you know, his indignance at the African-American soldiers who were his prison guards, his pardons, his kids trying to exonerate him from history. There's so much stuff that it's really kind of fun to go and approach a role like that when there's a wealth of information. So that, I think, was maybe the best part of it. And then trying to inform that, finding a nugget and a point of view, I guess the improv came from once I own that point of view, then I'm trying to infuse every line with a guy who owns that point of view. Like, be that guy. Like, I have a Christian entitlement to being a slave owner. That's kind of how he felt.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to remember that and believe that and look at the fictional world. And by the way, and you probably experienced this too, it's pretty easy to act when there's like you're in the 1800s, when there's like horses and wool suits and torches everywhere and Southern accents. It's like, oh man, you're making it really easy to pretend.
Right. None dare call it acting.
Yeah. No, it's really fun that way too, to and old timey muskets or guns and wagons. It's really fun as well to be immersed in that time period in a fully blown version of it, you know?
Yeah.
The wardrobe, the wardrobe was unbelievable. The wardrobe was incredible.
Oh, I
just
bet it
that
was.
Alone. That alone.
I bet it was. I would imagine part of the experience as an improviser and being on stage is a sense of rhythm, a sense of musicality, and a sense of bringing that rhythm and musicality to the lines as scripted, and knowing that the scene needs to build musically to this point, or even from your time on Veep, knowing that the ending of a scene needs to have a button, whether it's a look or a door slam or a epithet, you know. I imagine that all of that has to be kind of related and brought to bear.
Yeah, I think it's stepping out of my comfort zone, which was scary, to be honest, and it's not fun to be like sort of an evil guy and on set where people kind of avoid you.
Yeah, imagine.
You know, it's like wearing a Nazi swastika or something. Like, hey man, how's it going? And they just kind of walk away from you.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it's similar to comedy, or like good comedy. The stuff I've done is like, there's a lot of hard work. You rehearse it, and then you sort of, like in comedy, you hide the fact that you know there's a joke coming. You're just pretending you're not doing this for comedic sake. You're just behaving in a realistic way. And so with drama, similarly, if I'm evil, I'm not going to behave evil. I'm not going to try to like push evil. I'm just going to behave inside that point of view, and it'll take care of itself. And that's, I think, the other side, perhaps, but the same muscle. And so that's interesting. And yeah, and it's great. And I love comedy more than I love drama, obviously. So I do those projects sporadically because they are kind of draining. Like, you take drama home with you, and you don't really take comedy home with you. You just sort of drop it. They say cut, and you're like, where are we going to dinner? In drama, you're like still weeping, and you're still like, you know, you're still in it.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Matt Walsh and Bluebird Improv will be touring New England this summer of 2025 with special guest Rachel Dratch. Go to their Instagram page at Bluebird Legendary Improv for more information, and their New England dates will also be in this episode's description at our website. Then send us your magical discovery via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com, or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. Thanks, as always, to improvising actor-clown Matthew Croak, web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Chrissy Kochansky. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Mark Larson, the author of Ensemble, An Oral History of Chicago Theater,
And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 967 2901sts of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Matt Walsh, any tips for the youngsters out there, the up-and-coming improvisers? How would you advise them to develop their improv magic?
One, listen to this podcast.
Obviously.
Continue to listen to Austin Titchener and his musings about theater. I think it's all the same. I think becoming a good actor is really valuable. Like committing to the realities that you guys come up with on stage and doing it all the time, you know, doing it every night. Those simple things are true. Be nice to people because you never know. They might cast you in a show down the road.
The golden rule, don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick, yeah. Because the truth is a lot of people you play with, sometimes you end up working with them again and it's wonderful. Like you're not... But you're not doing it for that intention. It's just easier to be cool. What other advice would I have for the kids? Yeah, and like kind of what Dell would say, you know, just be well-read, be of the world, understand a little bit of art, music, a little bit of math, a little bit of science, you know, because you are sort of a trickster who has to know it all because you never know if somebody's going to label you an astrophysicist, Nobel Prize winning lecturer, and then you're like, oh shit, and you'll be stuck
playing to the top of your intelligence. Yeah,
top of your intelligence is like using it, but top of your intelligence for me is really just using your life. Like if they say Nobel laureate in the scene, then go to someone you know, one who has won a Nobel laureate. Like I think Bob Dylan won one. You could play Bob Dylan or whatever. Like it's what you know really well. Bring your life experience to the work, and that. I think that includes being a little vulnerable. So it's all the same, I guess, with acting. Commitment, really commit. And I think with improv too, you're blessed with, it's not stand-up. So if you're in a comedy setting, you don't always have to be the one who's generating, you know, jokes and funny things. You can just behave.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.